For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It is May the 12th, and we are in Parashas Yisro, page 404, and I believe we're up to Pasuk Tezayin, verse 16. Vahi vayom ha-shlishi was on the third day, bios ha-boker, when it was the morning. Vahi kolos uvrakim, and there was noise, and there was lightning. So there's thunder and lightning. Ve'anon kaved al-hahar, and a heavy cloud over the mountain. The kol shofar chazak ma'od, and the sound of the shofar very powerful. Vayacherad kol ha'am asher b'machaneh, and the entire nation that was in the camp trembled. Vayotzei Moshe es ha'am likras to Elokim min ha'machaneh. Moshe took the nation out from the machaneh, from the camp, to greet God. Vayisiatzu v'sachti sahar, and they stood in the underneath of the mountain. Literally, or at least we understand that to mean at the foot of the mountain, but we'll see that Chazal, our sages, have a different interpretation. But Har Sinai Ashan Kulo, Har Sinai was completely smoky. Mifnei Asher Yarad Alav Hashem Ba'esh, for Hashem had descended upon it in fire. Vayal Ashano Ke'eshan Akivshan, and its smoke went up like the smoke of a furnace, of the furnace. Vayecherad kol ha'har ma'od, and the entire mountain shook very much. So now, not only were the people shaking, now the mountain is shaking. Vayehi kol ha'shofar holech v'chazek ma'od. The sound of the shofar was going and getting stronger. So we had mentioned the shofar already. Now we mention it again, and it's getting stronger. Moshe yedaber, Moshe would speak. V'ho'e Elokim ya'anenu v'kol, and God would answer him with sound, which, as Rashi explains, means that Hashem would give his Moshe's voice strength, that it could be heard. So Moshe, who doesn't have a speaker system, a sound system, mm-hmm. So Hashem gives him the power to speak and be heard over all the noise to the entire nation. Vayevid Hashem al Har Sinai, and Hashem came down on Har Sinai al Rosh Ahar, to the top of the mountain. Vayikra Hashem al Moshe El Rosh Shahar, and Hashem called to Moshe to the top of the mountain. Vayal Moshe, Moshe went up. Vayomra Hashem al Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Raid Ha'ed Ba'am. Go down and warn the nation. Pen Yehersu El Hashem Liros, lest they break through to see Hashem. V'nafal Mimenu Rav, and many of them will fall. Many of them will die. Vagama Kohanim Anigashim al Hashem, and also the Kohanim, which in this case means the Bechoros, the firstborn, who are acting as the Kohanim, as the priests, who get close to Hashem, Yitzkadoshu, they also should prepare themselves, meaning keep themselves from going beyond the point that they're supposed to go. Penifotz by Hashem, lest Hashem punish them, hurt them. It says here, burst forth against them. Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, Moshe said to Hashem, Lo yukal ha'am lalos el Har Sinai. The nation is unable to go up to Har Sinai. Ki hata ha'edosa banu lemar, for you warned us, saying, Hagbela tahar, fence off the nation, v'kidashto, and sanctify it. So there's no need for me to go warn the people. They are already warned for the past 3 days. The mountain has been surrounded by a fence. Vayomer Elav Hashem, Hashem said to him, Lech raid, go down. Ve'olisa ata ve'aron imach, and you'll come up with Aaron. Ve'ha'kohanim ve'ha'am, and the Kohanim, meaning the firstborn and the nation. Al gehersu la'alos el Hashem, should not break forth to see Hashem. Pen yifratzbam, lest Hashem strike against them and punish them. Vayered Moshe el Ha'am, and Moshe went down to the nation, Vayomer Aleim, and he told them to be careful not to go up on the mountain. And now that follows with the Aseres Hadibros. Right. Now, so we have
a whole bunch to discuss over here, obviously.
This is either on the sixth day of Sivan or on the seventh day of Sivan. It's a difference of opinion in the Gemara, as we've mentioned before. What day was Har Sinai? Was it on the sixth of Sivan or on the seventh of Sivan? We celebrate Shavuos on the sixth of Sivan. We keep 2 days here in Chutzlar. It's outside of Eretz Yisrael, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's kept on the sixth of Sivan. But the truth is, the date of Shavuos is not contingent on the date that they receive the Torah. Even though Shavuos is Man Matan Torah Seinu, it's the time that we received the Torah, the time the Torah was given to us. Nevertheless, the date of Shavuos does not necessarily need to be the same date as the date that they received the Torah. Because nowhere in the Torah does it say that the Yontif of Shavuos should be on the day that we received the Torah. It doesn't even give a date for the Yontif of Shavuos. All it says is that Shavuos takes place
50 days
after the second day of Pesach. 50 days counting from the second day of Pesach, that is when the Yontif of Shavuos is. So even though we say it is the time that we receive the Torah, but it doesn't have to be the same date every year. Because our calendars are fixed, now they're fixed, and therefore it always turns out that 50 days from the second day of Pesach is the 16th of Nisan, and if you count 50 days from then, you will end up with the 6th of Sivan. Because Nisan has 30 days in it, so starting from the 16th of Nisan, if you include the 16th of Nisan, you have 15 days in Nisan till the end of the month. Then you have 29 days of Iyar, because Iyar always has 29 days. That gives you 44. And then 6 days of Sivan, that's 50. So that's the way it works out now. When the new moon, when the month is determined by witnesses who see the moon, which is the old system, and I assume will come back into play when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, so then it is possible that Nisan would only have 29 days instead of 30, and it is possible that Iyar would have 30 days instead of 29 days. And therefore it is possible, in theory, for Shavuos to end up on either the 5th of Nisan, of Sivan, the 6th of Sivan, or the 7th of Sivan. They're all possible, depending on how many days you have in Nisan and in Iyar. So it doesn't really matter, as far as we're concerned, for what date we celebrate Shavuos, doesn't matter whether the Torah, in fact, was given on the 6th of Sivan or the 7th of Sivan. But it is a machlokas, when was it given? On the 6th or 7th of Sivan. The time that we're talking about here, starting with Pasuk Tes Zayin, verse 16, that we started reading with tonight, is on either the 6th or 7th of Sivan, depending on which opinion you take in the Gemara. So it was the third day, and it was the morning, and there was a cacophony of sound, and also there was lightning and a heavy cloud on the mountain. So there was
a whole
bunch of different sounds.
Okay, thank you.
So it says kolos, various sounds, and there was lightning, heavy cloud on the mountain. There was also the sound of the shofar, very strong, and everybody trembled. They hadn't left the camp yet. The camp of the Jewish people was not right up against Har Sinai. It was set back from Har Sinai, and it was actually a little bit of a distance from the foot of the mountain. We know this because in Parashat Kisisa, when the Jews unfortunately worship the golden calf, and Moshe comes down from the mountain and meets Yehoshua, his faithful student, who has encamped at the foot of the mountain for 40 days, waiting for his master Moshe to return. So when Moshe comes down and meets Yehoshua says to Moshe, Kol milchama b'machane. It sounds like there's a war going on in the camp. Because Yehoshua isn't there. He's not in the camp. He's at the foot of the mountain, and he hears the sounds of the people worshipping the golden calf, and to him it sounds like a war going on. And he says to Moshe, there's a war going on in the camp. That's what it sounds like. To which Moshe tells him, no, that's not so. Unfortunately, the sounds we're hearing are actually sounds that pain the ear. It is sounds of the Jews worshipping the golden calf. So the Rashi explains over there that the camp was set back from the mountain at a pretty significant distance, and Yehoshua had accompanied his master until the very edge of the mountain, which is as far as he was allowed to go. When they got to the fence, Yehoshua set up his tent over there, and Moshe went upstairs. So the Jews here haven't yet left the camp. They haven't come to the edge of the mountain, but they are trembling in fear because it's a whole scene out there of noise and lightning and cloud, shofar. There's just a lot going on over there, and it's a pretty frightening sight. The Jews perhaps would not have even had the courage to step out and go to the mountain. But in the next Pasuk, in Pasuk Yizayin, verse 17, Moshe takes the people out. He brings them to the foot of the mountain because the people are scared of what is going on. Yeah?
The shofar, it was just noise, or was someone blowing it?
Well, it wasn't someone.
Did it come from the top of the mountain?
It must have come from somewhere on the mountain. I don't know where. But yeah, God was having the shofar blown. It's hard to say God was blowing the shofar, but
right.
He was causing the shofar to be blown. It wasn't a person blowing the shofar. The sound of a shofar.
But I thought everybody had to stay behind the gevul.
Yes.
What about Aaron?
No. Aaron was there. For Matan Torah, as we'll see in a moment, there were some people who were allowed to cross that line, as we'll see.
Okay.
Now, are we talking about the third time Moshe has gone up to?
No, he went up on the second day of Sivan, the third day of Sivan, the fourth day of Sivan, and this is the fourth time he's going up.
Okay. So this is like the sixth day.
Yeah, he did not go up on the fifth day, and now on the sixth or the seventh day, depending which way we're talking about, he went up for the fourth time.
Okay.
But he's going to go up twice, as we see. He went up, came down, and went up again. There is a medrash that says that somehow they were able to see the thunder and hear the lightning. Whatever that means, I'm not going to pretend to begin to explain that, neither allegorically nor scientifically. I have no idea what it means. But the fact of the matter is, they were now being inundated with experiences that no one has ever experienced. There's just so much going on in front of them. It was an absolutely frightening, terrifying experience in this revelation of Hashem. It is the single greatest revelation of Hashem since the creation of the world, and since before this or since there has never been an equal revelation of Hashem's presence. Because Hashem was revealing Himself in this way, all of the physical norms were turned on their head. Everything which you would expect in the normal physical, natural course of events and course of order of things was turned on its head. Hashem was revealing Himself, showing His complete mastery over everything, and everything was topsy-turvy, and everything was shaking, and it was just a very, very terrifying experience. The Moshe then brings the Jews out to the foot of the mountain. As it says in Pasuk Yizayin, verse 17, Moshe took them out to greet Hashem from the camp. The Gemara tells us that here Hashem did something which is not normally done. Usually, if a king sets an appointment with one of his subjects, or many of his subjects, and the appointment is taking place not in the palace, but someplace else in a neutral place, then the normal way that things work is that the subject or subjects get there first and wait for the king to arrive. Here, Hashem gets there first, so to speak. Hashem is there at the mountain waiting for the Jewish people. And it says that we came likras ho'elokim, to greet God, which means that God is actually coming out to from the mountain. There's a meeting going on between us and Hashem, but He's there first. There is something to be said over here about a meeting that has to do with Torah. The Gemara seems to imply that any time a person is going to study Torah, or a group is going to study Torah, then the Shekhinah, God's divine presence, is kiviyachol, so to speak, is there first. That Hashem gives, so to speak, He treats the study of Torah on such an important thing that He is there first to listen to our Torah that we study. But there is also here an element of admonishment to the Jewish people, because the Jewish people did not get up, were not up early to go to the Torah. It doesn't say that it was Vayash came, they got up early. It says it was in the morning. So we derive from here that the Jews actually, so to speak, slept in, which means that, now what does slept in mean? It means they weren't up at the crack of dawn. Where we would have expected on such a momentous occasion, the Jews would have left, would have had trouble sleeping, and would have been up very early, and would be there at the mountain, just waiting, you know, for the minutes to tick by to start receiving the Torah. But instead, we were late getting there. It is from here, some say, that the practice, very common practice, on the night of Shavuos, to stay up all night studying Torah, to show that we are excited about the receiving of the Torah, and that we wait with bated breath, and we're not able to sleep because we're waiting for the morning when we can receive the Torah, as we reenact the receiving of the Torah at Har Sinai. But it would be difficult to explain this as the Jews just got lazy and slept in. It would be very difficult to say. First of all, it's difficult to say that the righteous amongst them, the best of them, slept in. You would think that those who were of the highest stature would understand that they need to be there at Har Sinai early, and they would have woken up everybody else, number one. Number two, when you have a nation of millions of people, you're always going to have some people who are awake. I mean, to think that everybody was asleep and no one was there to sound the alarm, hey, you got to get up. It's 5 in the morning, it's time to wake up and get ready for the Torah. It's difficult to say that the Jews all slept in. It therefore appears, if it's true that the Jews slept in, that it was premeditated, that the Jews thought that it was better to be asleep rather than to be awake waiting for the giving of the Torah. It would have to be that way, that it was something the Jews decided to do. It was a wrong decision, which is why, as some say, that's where the minhag comes from, to stay up all night on the night of Shavuos, to show that we do anticipate the Torah. But evidently, there is some element here of the Jews having made a decision, and the decision was somehow flawed. Now, what would be a reason to actually go to sleep rather than stay up?
They may not have really fully comprehended the importance.
It's hard to say that. It's hard to say that. I mean, this is the single most important thing that ever happened.
Do we know how much the Moses told them how...
I mean, in the leading up to the Torah, as we've spoken about the past couple of weeks, the Jews they didn't want to get the Torah the way Hashem wanted it. They wanted to get direct communication from Hashem. Right. I mean, they separated from their spouses. They knew that this was a big deal. It's hard to say they weren't aware of the significance. I wonder if there's something else to it over here. I wonder if the Jews slept because they knew that they were going to now have a direct communication from Hashem. And I wonder if, since one of the methods that Hashem uses to communicate with prophets is through a dream, is while they are sleeping, I wonder if the Jews thought that it was appropriate to be asleep, not to be asleep for the giving of the Torah, but the night preceding the giving of the Torah, since the Jews were going to go from their regular status to being like Moshe for that short time of the Ten Commandments, of the Aseret HaDibros, I wonder if they felt that first they had to be asleep where they would receive prophecy on the and the regular level of prophecy, and then move from there to the heightened level of prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. I wonder if there's something like that going on over here. It's pure conjecture. I don't know. But it's difficult to say that the Jews just happened to oversleep. It is more likely that this was a premeditated decision. Now, when Moshe takes them out and they get to the foot of the mountain, it says in Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, Vayisiatzu v'sachti sahar, and they stood in the underneath of the mountain. That's the literal translation. They translate it as at the bottom of the mountain. The Gemara tells us from here, Kafa alhem har kigigis. Hashem took the mountain and held it over them like a barrel. Picked up the mountain and held it over them. So that when they got to the bottom of the mountain, they weren't at the foot of the mountain anymore. The mountain was actually held over their heads. And the Gemara says that Hashem said to the Jewish people, in tekablu es haTorah, if you accept the Torah mutav, then it's good. V'im lav, and if you don't accept the Torah, sham teik furaschem, there you will be buried. I'll bury you right here. So in the end, we were coerced into accepting the Torah. Now, if you look at that in a vacuum, it sounds like we didn't really make a decision to accept the Torah. We were just coerced into it. But we know from our discussion last week that the truth is, although we didn't get into all the details of it, but on the fifth day of Sivan, we say Na'aseh V'Nishma. We say we will do, even before we understand what it is that we're supposed to do. We're just going to do it, and later we'll understand it better. So the Jews had already accepted the Torah. But here, in the moment of the Torah being given, Hashem uses coercion. He uses coercion in the form of the fear, the trembling of the mountain, and the lightning, and the thunder, and the cloud, and the noise of the shofar. And he uses that. And then the physical fear of the mountain actually towering over their heads, being ready to be dropped on top of them, should they not accept the Torah. So that in the end, we are actually coerced. We're actually coerced into doing it. So the question is, so did we accept the Torah? Or were we forced into accepting the Torah? Was this voluntary or not? In the end, it seems that we were forced.
Yes? Yeah, and it doesn't mean they were forced, but their understanding of the Torah was so real and so direct that they themselves realized that without Torah, there's no reason to live.
Okay, so you're suggesting that it's not that they were afraid of it's not that they were forced into accepting it because Hashem threatened them, but rather they came to such an incredible clarity of understanding as to the fact that the Torah is the purpose for our existence, that it was impossible to refuse it at that point. Whereas yesterday, on the fifth day of Sivan, before all of this happened, then out of sound mind, they were able to say, we accept the Torah, and it was a full acceptance. But in the moment, with all that was going on, it became so clear, and it was impossible to do anything but accept. So what you're suggesting is that, as we always say, if you have if a person is faced with a temptation to sin, and at that moment that they're faced with a temptation to sin, they receive a very clear, a very clear understanding, they have a clarity of why we exist, that we're here to serve God, and that this temptation is to pull us away from God, and that's why our whole reason for being here is to overcome the temptation, no one would ever sin. It'd be impossible to sin, which would also, therefore, remove any reason to be rewarded. Because if we have no temptation to sin, then we have no reason to be rewarded. So here's the thing is, at this moment, the Jews were so overwhelmed by the revelation of God, it was impossible to sin. It was impossible to reject the Torah. In which case, our real acceptance of the Torah was the day before, when we said Na'aseh V'Nishma, not on the sixth day of Sivan when it was so obvious no one could resist. The Gemara does say that Mikan Mudar Rabba La Oraisa, that from here we have a great excuse for the Torah. That if the Jews in the future don't keep the Torah, so there's an excuse, and they could say, we never really accepted it, we were coerced into accepting it. Which would mean, even though we did in theory accept it on the fifth day of Sivan, but in the moment, we really had no choice but to accept it, because like you said, it was so clear that this is the real thing. However, the Gemara then says, Hadar Kiblu Abimei HaChashverosh, that then, after the Purim story, it says at the end of the Megillah, Kimu V'Kiblu HaYehudim, the Jews established and accepted. So the Gemara says, Kiblu, Kimu, Masha Kiblu Kvar, that we established that which we already had accepted. So that now we re-accepted the Torah. Through the miracle of Purim, we all came to a clarity that Hashem is our King, and that the Torah is His Word, and we accepted the Torah willingly. Now, that also comes through a clarity of vision. It comes through the miracle of Purim. And the Jews see that our whole reason for being here is to keep the Torah and serve Hashem. And therefore there's a complete acceptance. Yet the Gemara is saying that that's not a coercion. There, it is of our own volition. So, but one could argue there's also a coercion over there, because again, the way that Chani is explaining it, over there also, how could anybody refuse once the miracle of Purim happened? But the difference is that when the miracles happened over here, all the supernatural events that happened, it was just that, it was supernatural. And because it was supernatural, when you see something that is supernatural, it takes you out of your rational thought. Because everything is not the way it's supposed to be. And therefore, the brain doesn't absorb it the way it should, and is therefore off. Is not in line, and whatever the Jews then went on to do and say, one could argue was not with full comprehension. But with the Purim story, there, although there was an incredible miracle, but it was all through Hester. Purim was all through God's hidden face. There was no supernatural miracle. It was all done through natural means. And the Jews came to the clarity that our purpose in life is only to serve God. And that's without miracles, without anything supernatural. And that is something which made us accept the Torah all over again, but now it was through the natural order. And that's a more meaningful acceptance than when it's forced upon us. Okay, so here we are at the foot of the mountain, and we accept the Torah. We want the Torah. The Torah goes on here to say, in Pasuk Yudches, verse 18, that the mountain was full of smoke, for God had descended upon it in fire, and its smoke went up like the smoke of the furnace, and the entire mountain now trembled. So it's getting worse. With all the noise and the thunder, lightning, and cloud, chauffeur that happened before, it's now getting worse. Now it's not just the people who are trembling, the whole mountain is trembling. V'har Sinai Ashan Kulo, Pasuk is Hes, verse 19. And the sound of the chauffeur was going and getting stronger. It was getting more powerful. So whatever happened, it's getting worse now. It's getting more and more powerful. Moshe would speak and Hashem would give him the power for his voice to project. So Hashem descends upon Har Sinai to the top of the mountain, and he calls Moshe to the top of the mountain. Moshe goes up. Now Hashem says to Moshe, go back down. So here the Jews are all ready for the Torah. They've been brought up by Moshe to the foot of the mountain. The mountain's over their head. They've got thunder, lightning, cloud, shofar. It's an incredible scene. And Hashem says to Moshe, come upstairs. Moshe goes up the mountain. He gets to the top of the mountain. Hashem says, go back down the mountain. You just told me to come here. Go back down the mountain. Why? Why go down? Go and warn the people that they shouldn't break through in order to see Hashem. and then people will die. We know that 3 days previously they had been given a mitzvah to fence off the Torah for the Shlosh HaSimei Hagbalah, the 3 days of fencing off the Torah. The first day of the fencing off of the Torah is today. Today being the third day of Sivan is the first day of the Hagbalah, of the fencing off of the Torah. And the Jews here were on the sixth day of Sivan. For 3 days they had a fenced off mountain. They knew they couldn't go up the mountain, but Hashem says to Moshe, go down and warn the people that they may not ascend the mountain. So Moshe says to Hashem, why do I need to go down? The people can't go up the mountain, for you already warned us to fence off the mountain and to sanctify it, to separate it. So of course they're not going to break through the fence. But Hashem says to Moshe, no, go down and warn them, and then you and Aaron will come up, and the Kohanim, and as we learn in Parashas Mishpatim, that there were, besides Moshe, there was also Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, Aaron's two sons, and also the Shivim Zekanim, the 70 elders, were allowed to cross the line of the fence and begin to ascend the mountain. However, there were specific boundaries how far they could go. The elders were only able to go so far. Nadav and Avihu were able to go a little bit further. Aaron was able to go a little bit further. But only Moshe was able to go all the way up the mountain to Hashem. So there were lines of demarcation, not only for the people at the foot of the mountain, which would be the fence, but also the 70 elders, Nadav and Avihu, and Aaron each had their own place that they were able to go until and then stop. Chazal, our sages, teach us from here that Mizarzin es ha'adam, that we warn a person, Rashi actually says it over here, you warn a person kodem maisa, before the event, v'chozenu mizarzin oso b'shas maisa, and then you go back and warn them at the time of the event again. I mentioned this morning in the class I gave this morning, and I told them this example, and I think it's a good example, is that you're taking a child to shul, and you tell the child as you're walking to shul, when you come to shul, you need to sit quietly in shul. There is no talking when you're sitting in shul. Then you get to shul, and you sit the child down, and you start to daven, and the child begins to talk. So we see from here that one should not be upset with a child who does that, because your warning was inadequate, because it's not sufficient to warn prior to the event. You warn prior to the event, and then you warn at the time of the event as well. When you get to shul, and you get to your seat, and you sit down, then you are to tell the child a second time, okay, now is the time that we don't talk anymore. If you don't do that, if you don't have the warning prior to the event, and then the warning at the event, that warning is insufficient. You need both warnings. One to prepare, and then one at the moment. So Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right, we did fence off the mountain 3 days in advance. That was in order to show how important it is. Everybody should get used to this idea. You cannot go up on the mountain. But even after that, and it's been there for 3 days, you still must go back down and warn them a second time that there is no crossing this line. Now is the time that the law is in effect. There is no crossing this line. And no one did, except for the ones who were allowed to. No one actually crossed the line. Sort of.
Sort of.
In the end, somebody does cross the line, but not here. And not in a physical sense. Who crosses that line? Okay, one could argue Nadav and Avihu crossed the line somewhat because they're going to get killed for offering a sacrifice that they should not have offered. But the one who really crosses the line is Korach. Korach, later on, is going to argue that Moshe, you are guilty of nepotism for having given Aaron the position of high priest. And you and Aaron, therefore, have no business ruling over the Jewish people. Because we're all holy. We are all sanctified. We all heard the Aseres HaDibros at Har Sinai. and you're no better than anybody else, Moshe. So why do you think you should rule over the Jewish people? Korach was making the mistake of forgetting about the fence. The fence didn't just keep us off the mountain. It also announced that we are not Moshe, and Moshe is not us. That even though temporarily we were given the status of Moshe, we were able to have a direct communication from Hashem, something which no one in history other than Moshe has ever had, and we were able to get a direct communication from Hashem. However, the fence tells us that despite that, we're not Moshe. Moshe still is the prophet. Everybody else is minor compared to Moshe. Moshe is an illegal all his own. And when he wants to rebel, he attempts to tear down this fence. Again, it's figurative. But he wants to say that there is no difference between Moshe and the rest of the people. That is a direct attack on this fence. Hashem says to Moshe, go down, warn the people that there is no crossing this line. Even though you're getting a direct communication, you're not allowed to cross this line. You must stay off the mountain. Later on, we're going to learn that the way the Torah was taught to the Jewish people was that, now this is after the death of Nadav and Avihu, so we're only left with Elazar and Isamar, the other two sons of Aaron. But the way that the Torah was taught was that Moshe would first, every time he got a new piece that he would have to teach throughout the 40 years, he would first teach it to Aaron, only Aaron. Then Aaron would sit down next to Moshe, and then Aaron's sons would come in, and Moshe would teach it a second time, this time to Aaron's sons. Aaron is hearing it for a second time. His sons are hearing it for the first time. His sons then go sit next to Moshe and next to Aaron. And now the elders come in. And Moshe teaches it to the elders. Aaron is hearing it for a third time. His sons are hearing it for the second time. The elders are hearing it for the first time. And then all the Jewish people are addressed and by Moshe. So that now all the people are hearing it for the first time, the elders for the second time, the sons of Aaron for the third time, and then Aaron for the fourth time.
Who's Joshua?
That's what I was just
going to
ask.
And Yahushua is a student at this time. He's not a leader yet. Then Moshe would step out, and Aaron would teach it. Aaron has now heard it four times, and he would teach it. So now his sons have heard it four times as well. Three from Moshe, one from Aaron. The elders have heard it three times. Twice from Moshe, once from Aaron. The people have heard it twice, once from Moshe, once from Aaron. Then Aaron would leave, and his sons would teach it. So now, the elders have heard it four times. Twice from Moshe, once from Aaron, once from his sons. And the people have heard it three times. Once from Moshe, once from Aaron, once from his sons. Then his sons would leave, and the elders would teach it, and the people would now have heard it four times, once from Moshe, once from Aaron, once from his sons, and once from the elders. This was the process of the teaching of the Torah. So you'll say, that seems pretty cumbersome, why don't we just have it being taught four times by Moshe to everyone, rather than have this tiered system? So, I'll give an answer to that in a moment, but I think that that is what is going on over here. That in the receiving of the Torah itself, there is Moshe who goes all the way up the mountain and has the most intense connection with Hashem and therefore the greatest understanding of Torah. But Aaron also gets a certain measure of understanding of Torah that supersedes everybody else, as he also ascends the mountain to a certain point. His sons, a little less than that, the elders a little less than that, and the people not at all.
So you're saying that they're receiving Torah as equal?
They're receiving it a little bit more than those. Everybody's receiving Torah, but they're receiving a little bit more because they're closer to the action. There's an interesting phenomena. The question is whether this was deliberately done or not.
there's a claim that this is deliberately done. But if you open up any page of a Gemara, if you open up any page in all of Shas, in all of Gemara, if you open it up, so you know how a Gemara looks. The middle of the Gemara has, the middle of the page has the actual text of the Gemara. Flanking the Gemara on either side is commentary. Rashi on one side, Tosfos on the other side. And the way it works is, you have a few lines of Rashi and Tosfos at the top of the page, and then the lines of Rashi and Tosfos get more narrow as the lines of the Gemara are in the middle of the page in larger, bolder print. And at the bottom of the page, it rounds off Rashi and Tosfos, because the commentary is always longer than the actual text, which makes sense. So the text is kind of in the middle, and it's flanked all around by the commentary. Well, the way our Gemaras are printed is that you always have four lines of commentary, of Rashi and Tosfos, at the top of the page. Four lines of Rashi and Tosfos before you see any text of the Gemara. There's always four lines. So there are those who suggest that this was deliberate in order to show that you've got to learn it at least four times before you can even begin to discuss it. Forget absorb it completely. But if you want to be considered to have even studied it once, you have to study it at least four times. Because before four times, you really have nothing. It's really just the superficial thing, which is in one ear out the other. You got to really do it four times just to get the first level of understanding. So that's probably what this means over here. Now, the question is, why have this system? Why not have Moshe teach it four times to everybody? So it seems that embedded in the giving of the Torah, even though we are saying Moshe is the source of the Torah itself, and he's the one through whom we got it from Hashem, nevertheless, already within the system of the giving of the Torah is the system of other teachers, of others being in the teaching process. Because had that not happened, had Moshe been the only source of Torah, that there was no other source of Torah, that we would have heard it four times from Moshe. And then, subsequently, all clarification would come from Moshe, which is essentially would happen if there really was confusion and no one knew the answer, you'd have to go to Moshe. But if that was the case, that everything always came from Moshe, what would happen upon the death of Moshe? Then there's no more Torah. Because there's no more Moshe. And Torah can't exist without Moshe. It seems that already within the giving of the Torah itself, where clearly Moshe is in a league by himself, nevertheless, Aaron is already empowered to be a teacher. His sons are already empowered to be teachers. The elders are already empowered to be teachers, which sets up the system that even post-Moshe, there's going to be teachers. And that will go on through generations, that there's always going to be teachers of Torah who received it from the previous generation, and it is their job to disseminate it to the next generation. Yes.
I kind of think that's how we all learn, though. If it's we're taught something, we're taught, you know, review, then we take a test that shows that we know it. So that's kind of like the giving it over to the next person when we take that test to see that we know it.
I mean, that's what gives us
certification
that we now know it enough. And we can now transmit.
That they were giving it over because they then knew it. And that they were...
I see. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
I think we should point out that the Torah that we got from Moshe and Harsinai, both the oral and the written Torah, they got both.
Yeah. They did get both from Moshe and Harsinai. That is true. Although, here, not yet. I mean, here they only got the Seres HaDibros. So there's only the Ten Commandments. Now, we haven't read through the Ten Commandments yet. That's coming up. And the Ten Commandments are packed with a whole bunch of different details, but still Moshe went upstairs afterwards for 40 days to receive the rest of it. So there is more that is going to be that Moshe is going to get over the next 40 days. So so Moshe does go down. He does warn the people that they are not to cross the line, and then he comes back upstairs for the Aseres HaDibros, and the Torah lists the Aseres HaDibros, which we're not going to have time for this evening, and that'll be, Mr. Hashem, what we will do in next week. The Aseret HaDibros, though, we're going to have the entirety of the Aseret HaDibros, all 10, written out for us over here. We will discover, after we finish reading about the Aseret HaDibros, that we Jews couldn't handle hearing all of the Aseret HaDibros, as much as we wanted direct communication from Hashem, but in the end it overwhelmed us. And therefore we said to Moshe, after only hearing 2 of the Aseret HaDibros, that we need you to get the rest of it for us and tell it to us. It's too much for us to handle. So in the end, we did go back to the original system that Hashem had planned, which is that it would all go through Moshe. We would not get direct communication. But for the first 2 of the Aseret HaDibros, we did get direct communication from Hashem. And
so,
yes?
Is that a lack of Amunah?
Is what a lack of Amunah?
That you wouldn't say, die hearing Hashem speak?
So Moshe felt it was a rejection of Hashem. But Hashem said to Moshe, no, it's a good thing that the Jews ended up saying they couldn't handle it, because this way they will fear me forever. They will always have a healthy fear of Hashem. We will learn that the fear, they actually did die. Every time one of the Aseret HaDibros was said, our souls left us. They left our body because the soul was just yearning to connect to Hashem. And we had to be revived by Malachim, by the angels that Hashem sent. It was a very, very terrifying and difficult experience. It wasn't a simple experience at all. The Torah, the giving of the Torah.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.